The upcoming Future Blockchain Summit coverage is brought to you by Cook Finance, a revolution in DeFi asset management.
We're back with Clem Chambers of Investors Hub, very diversified, well-rounded investor. Welcome back, Clem.
I'm well-rounded because I'm eating too much.
Well, you're well-rounded because you're knowledgeable in many areas, but eating is never a bad thing, Clem. So now you and me both. Let's talk about your macro outlook first. You've got a look. We talked several times in the last year, and you were bearish in stocks around the fall of last year, I would say, and then you switched to a more bullish stance. Right now, the S&P 500 seems to have waned in its momentum. People are wondering whether or not they should be buying the dip, or perhaps waiting for more of a pullback. What would you do?
Well, I think the interesting thing to look at is to go back to 2000 and see what happened after the dot-com crash, because the Fed then tried to pin the Dow in a sideways trend for years and years and years. Obviously, we had 9/11 and we had some, you know, drawdowns and a crash. But basically, for years and years, the market would go back to a level and just trade sideways. That really was the long-term trend. And I think that's what the Fed will be aiming for now. Now it's a, you know, post-COVID environment. They've still got all sorts of problems. There's obviously, there's issues with the supply chain, there's inflation, there's strange goings on in employment, and there's a lot of repair to be done. So rather than just keep pumping up asset prices, I think they'll try to pin them in a range around this area for quite some time. I think that will be the master plan. And there'll be buy the dip opportunities. There'll be things that no one's expecting that are bad that will happen. And therefore, I think it's going to be going sideways from here with some dips, maybe even serious dips, depending on people, how people react to the taper that's coming.
You're saying the Fed wants to pin assets around a range. What? How are they doing that? How are they pinning assets?
Well, I mean, it's all right now. It's all about money flow. And, you know, when they pump money in, up it goes. And when they don't pump money in, down it goes. So they've got pretty simple levers to pull. And if they want to get clever, they just buy assets at different yield terms and, you know, trade the curve of the bond yields. And, you know, that will regulate how much money is flowing in and flowing out. Because I think most people would say these days that long gone is free markets, and that the Fed has basically cornered the bond market and to an extent cornered the equity market too. So they are in control of asset prices, and it will be take a lot to actually take that control away to them from them. And, you know, I'm pretty sure they've got a master plan, a plan of what's going to happen over the next few years, because it's going to take 3 or 4 or 5 years for what's happened with COVID actually get out of the system, and be it inflation, be it all the disruption in the supply chains. Well, that's going to take a year or two to get out. The restocking of a lot of people, of a lot of parts of the economy, reason for a lot of this disruption is that there's been huge destocking in the last 2 years. So restocking, the repair of the supply chain, the removal of high stroke runaway inflation from the system, getting GDP back to a sustainable level, it's going to take years and years and years, and they will have a master plan for that. And it's not going to be assets going up vertically, and it's not going to be assets going down. So it'd be like 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's going to be generally sideways trading. And you can check the chart yourself after the dot-com crash, and you'll see, particularly in the Dow, there's a sideways trade. And, you know, once you've bigged things up, you've got to, you don't want them crashing back down again. You don't want them keep going up because that's unsustainable. So you want a period of calm and sideways. And I think that's what they'll be aiming for. Whether they can sustain it or not is another matter. If you think that they can roughly sustain it, then it's a buy the dip environment. If you think they can't sustain it, then you're going to be looking to avoid a crash. If you think they're going to have to keep printing because of fiscal deficits, et cetera, well, then assets are going to go through the roof. Yeah. Personally, I think they'll hold it sideways.
I guess the short days of buying whatever stock you want because stocks only go up are gone. Are you saying?
I think that's right. Absolutely right. Because if you look at that period, stocks only rise. That's the period of SPACs. That's the period of biotechs exploding. That's the past, not today. Today, there's no SPACs. You know, the meme stocks, I mean, you know, what's amazing going on there? Nothing special. That era has come to a close. And it's come to a close because the market bubbled and, you know, the Fed has shut it down by talking taper. And they will undoubtedly taper somewhat, even though it's money coming into the market still. But, you know, that it's clear that pretty much everybody in government, one way or the other, is now pretty worried about inflation. The trouble is for them is that there's not much of a way of controlling it unless they do austerity. And they're not going to do that, are they now? So they're in a little bit of a corner when it comes to inflation. So we should expect 7-8% inflation for 2 or 3 years out, at least, I think. And that's one of the big things to factor into investment.
You mentioned that before to me. Now, let's talk about particular assets that might be able to hedge against those levels of inflation, Clem. What about cryptocurrencies?
Well, crypto is very interesting because a lot of people think the reason gold's not going up is that Bitcoin is the fastest horse. So, you know, if you want to get out of Dodge, you jump on the fastest horse, not the most reliable one. And that's the one that gets all the attention and all the money flows. I don't actually buy that at all. And crypto is very interesting, but it's also very high. And, you know, is it going to be driven much higher from here? The main ones, Bitcoin and Ethereum, I doubt it. But I've been a bear, and for me, the market should be a lot lower. It's almost miraculous that it's where it's at, as far as I'm concerned. If you want to play in that market, and you know what you're doing, and you really should know what you're doing before you start gambling with crypto, the DeFi Ethereum tokens is the place to be, because that's where the pop is. So rather than going all in and then getting squashed, maybe with crypto going down 20%, you can go in a risk-off manner, i.e. smaller positions, and look to get much bigger pops in those smaller tokens. So, for example, one of the few that I've been holding is one called Rarible, because I expected to get listed on Coinbase. Well, it was listed last night, and up it went 50%. Well, you're not going to get an overnight rise in something like Bitcoin of 50%. Whereas a good token like Rarible, which is easy to understand, easy to study up on, easy to realize was going to go on Coinbase, offers that sort of opportunity. And there are others out there like that in the, you know, second tier, in the tokens that are worth, you know, hundreds of millions and low billions. So I think anybody who wants to play that game should have small position sizes and be looking for the next hot token or blockchain.
I want to talk about how to invest in the DeFi space, Ethereum in particular. Peter Lynch, one of the great investors, had a quote about timing. Well, he had several quotes, but one of them here, I'll just read this. Market timing is speculating and it rarely, if ever, pays off. Now, I want to get your take on whether or not that quote applies to cryptocurrencies, because you see volatile moves in the order of 25-30% on a weekly, bi-weekly basis. Is it important to wait for or try to time bottoms, try to time tops, local tops and local bottoms, try to find the opportune time to get in? Or does it really not matter? Because if you're a long-term investor and if you're investing in the DeFi thesis, would it really matter if you're getting in now or, you know, a couple thousand dollars less per coin? I'm talking about Ethereum, for example.
Well, hard professionals will tell the not hard amateurs to give them their money because there's no point market timing, because it can't be done. So us investment professionals should look after your money at great expense to you, and we'll do it all for you. So I can understand why market professionals say, you know, you can't market time. And it is very difficult, but investing is not so difficult if you have a thesis, an idea. This is going to happen because of that. That's going to happen because of that. If you have those ideas and you think long and hard about them, you will have no problems market timing not to the second or to the day or to the week, but over the medium term. It's the short term that's very, very difficult. And, you know, market timing is very hard. It's a skill game. And therefore, you just can't run in and go, oh, that chart looks like it's going up. I'm going to buy that chart. Oh, it looks like it's going to go down. I think it's going to go down. As I said, if you think it's going to happen, it isn't. If you know it's going to happen, then you should think about playing. And, you know, with crypto, the best way to invest in crypto is to play with it with small sums. So, you know, you could get on one of the exchanges like a Binance. I know all our American viewers will probably get shot dead by the law enforcement if they dare think about that. But if they get an exchange and they start get their wallets and put a few dollars into Ethereum or Bitcoin and start swapping them on exchanges and start reading and just playing with it at very, very small numbers. So tens of dollars rather than tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Over a few months, they will get the idea and they'll find it easy to invest. But you can't do it by reading books. You've got to do it the Montessori way, learn by doing. And that's the best way to start in crypto. Just play with it for a few months. And you'll and the light bulb will go on and you'll get it and you'll be fine.
I'm going to go back to your analogy about Bitcoin being the fastest horse in the race. Even fast horse, even the thoroughbreds need to take a breather and rest every once in a while. Do you think it's in cryptocurrencies are in a rest period right now?
Well, I mean, I think they've done amazingly because they were definitely crashing and then something happened. And they zoomed up again. And that was probably a mixture of China banning it. And so therefore, lots of people in China had to buy into Bitcoin before it's too late. And lots of Afghan people running for the hills, or not Afghan hills, but, you know, running out of Afghanistan, loaded up with assets and putting them all into Bitcoin to get on that plane. So I think that had a lot to do with it. And, you know, I think that turnaround, that was a real pivot. So now it's a question, is it going to break the all-time high? And I can certainly look at the chart and see it breaking its all-time high. But I'm a bear. I'm waiting for it to go under 20,000. And I think my horse is, you know, actually is going to end up as pet food in the short to medium term. But that's not what the market's telling me. The market's telling me it could easily go through the all-time high because that's what the market is saying. And like in the same way as I think gold is fantastic, the market is telling me it sucks. And I don't understand. Why? Gold sucks. I mean, everywhere you look, there's inflation. And I mean, it's even more extreme with platinum because this whole net carbon zero world relies on platinum catalysts. And, you know, apparently in the next N year, well, before we're old men, or before I am anyway, you know, there's going to be no internal combustion engine cars. It's all going to be running off batteries. And, yeah, you know, and it's going to be a hydrogen world. And it all needs platinum. And where's platinum going? Exactly nowhere. Doesn't work in my head.
Well, just on that note, I don't think we're both going to be old men by the time that happens. A lot of the UK, where you're from, didn't they just ban the sale of combustion engines or cars with combustion engines after, I think, 2035 or 2030?
Yeah, 32 or 35. Yeah, something impossible to actually make happen. But isn't California banning, you know, leaf
California
blowers?
California has already done that. New York State has just, in the last month or so, made a similar ban, EV cars only after 2035 for all dealers within the state of New York.
So that's only half past eight. That's halfway through the evening. I mean, that's ridiculous.
All right, so in our final segment, I'm going to give you a few themes and a link back to everything we've talked about. A few themes, trends that the world is heading towards. And then I'll just ask you to pick one or two assets to invest in accordance to those themes. So the first one would be the shift towards electric vehicles, like we just discussed. I mean, whether or not it's going to happen by a certain deadline in 14, 15 years, whatever that may be, that is the trend right now. How would you play it as an investor?
Exotic metals, rare earth metals in particular. Rare earth is going to be hot, hot, hot. Platinum group metals, because of the hydrogen economy, that's going to be a big thing. Really, all these exotic metals, I don't think you can go wrong in the medium term. Obviously, the world seems to want to catch up on this fact slower than me, because it's obvious that if you're going to make all these flash batteries, you're going to make all these electronic systems, you're going to make all these catalysts, you're going to make all these, you know, crazy fuel cells, etc. It's exotic metals that make all this stuff go. Platinum, palladium, iridium, rare earths. I can't even pronounce half of those guys, so you'll have to put up with it. But that's the stuff that, without that, none of it's even thinkable, let alone doable.
Central bank digital currencies are emerging across the entire world, basically. It's not just one central bank doing it, it's several. How's that going to impact the crypto landscape? How would that impact your investment portfolio?
Well, you see, I get very contrarian with this. The dollar is already a digital currency. 90% of all dollars are digital. So central bank digital currency, every single major currency is already a central bank digital currency. Now, if you're talking about programmable money, if you're talking about destroying fractional reserve banking by enabling people to put their cash into crypto wallets that aren't actual clearing banks, or what the American equivalent is, that will be the day. Now, the hallmark of crypto is FOMO, right? So once upon a time, all the private investors got FOMO, piled into Bitcoin. Then the corporates got FOMO, and they all, and some of them piled into Bitcoin. Now the governments are getting FOMO, and they say they're going to pile into a digital currency. Well, they've already got one of them. So what are they going to do? Make programmable money? I don't know. We'll see that. The risk of crypto is vast, because it's just a never-ending hackable environment horizon. You know, it's not a risk, it's a risk surface. And governments don't like risk, and they don't want a risk surface that they can't control. They don't want some hoodie in Russia emptying the central bank, do they now? So I think you'll hear a lot of yadda, 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 yadda about that, and zero execution. They tried it in China, nobody wanted it. They couldn't give it away in China.
Okay.
Well, they did give it away, and they still didn't, nobody wanted to use it.
Well, we'll follow that. We'll follow that trend and see if there's any changes in that. Finally, fiscal spending and fiscal policy. We're seeing an era of fiscal dominance, even probably, perhaps even more so, arguably, than monetary dominance. And so we've got a situation where the U.S. Treasury is on track to spend $1.5 trillion over the next decade or so, and this will have tremendous impacts on all corners of the American economy, perhaps the world economy. So when you've got governments spending the way they are now, unprecedented amounts, how would you invest?
Well, it's a very good question, because, you know, where is the escape hatch from this inflation? And if you look at China, they've shut down lots of escape hatches for people to actually sidestep what's going to go on in China. So it's a very difficult. I mean, you could have said in 1932, "Oh, you know, let's put all our money into gold because the American government's going to go belly up because of the Wall Street crash." Guess what? They came around and said, "We'll throw you in jail unless you hand over your gold." So it's a very, very difficult thing to think about. And I think it's the $64,000 question right now. My solution to it, I wouldn't say it's particularly genius, and that's a lot of gold, a lot of raw materials, because ultimately, you can't magic raw materials out of the ground with funny money, because the costs are real. Commodities are commodities because they are equivalent, or in a sense, anti-equivalent to paper money. You know, it's a hard, hard cost thing is digging copper out of the ground. And the more you devalue your money, the more that the nominal value of a commodity goes up. That's why they're commodities. So if you have 100% inflation, wheat costs twice as much. Oil costs twice as much, copper costs twice as much. So a hedge against inflation is definitely commodities in one form or another. If you want to get leverage, I suppose you've got to go to the listed producers. But it's actually much better not to have inflation and to have economic growth to make money in markets, because then the numbers going up are real, not just funny numbers caused by inflation. But after all great economic catastrophes like wars, there's always a massive bout of inflation. And COVID is our, well, this modern equivalent of being through a war. So we're now going to get the follow-on inflation that one would have got at the end of the Second World War, at the end of the First World War, at the end of the American Civil War, and at the end of the war between the Romans and the Carthaginians. It's what happens when governments get in straits. They debase their currency, and here we are.
All right, excellent. Clem, thank you so much for your insights today. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for watching Kitco News. I'm David Lin.
The upcoming Future Blockchain Summit coverage is brought to you by Cook Finance, a revolution in DeFi asset management.